Welcome to Questions Worth Asking.
Practicing conversations that matter.
So people in organizations can ask the questions worth asking. Hello, a very warm welcome back to Questions Worth Asking. It's been a while. My name's Priya.
And I'm John. Good to be back.
Really good to be back. It's been a while, right?
Yes, I think I was just looking. It looks like it's been like 2.5 years since we hit record. So,
oh my God, 2.5 years. Excited to be back. Where's that gone?
I know, it felt like not that long. But today, extra excited because we've got a mentor of mine, Dr. Marianne Chidiac. The way I met Mac, as we like to call her, is I was online and looking for Gestalt qualifications and talking to friends in organization development and knowledge management, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And Mac, I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned this to you, maybe. Mm-hmm. Your name came up from many different, 3 or 4 different networks and communities and circles of friends to say, oh, you have to check out ROG, Relational Organizational Gestalt. And so when I first sent it, got your contact info and first sent you an email years ago, and then you wrote back, it was very exciting to have your name. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, John. It's lovely to hear your feedback as well.
Thank you.
And I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
I think, yeah, let's jump right in. The topic we'd love to try and talk about today is transference and countertransference. And these are relatively rare words or concepts, at least with the clients I work with. So I wonder if you might be able to just sort of start us with a description or a story or a definition or some way to understand what these concepts are.
Yeah, laying the ground a bit. They are complex terms or concepts even, and they originated really with psychoanalysis. So originally, countertransference was seen as the response or the reaction of the analyst to the transference of a client, so to the projection of the client. So perhaps, yeah, it's useful to start naming what is transference. Transference is what we can call thoughts, feelings, behaviors that a person projects, usually inappropriately and mostly without awareness, onto another person. And all of that based on historical relationships that they've had. So let me give an example. If I've had a really bad relationship with my mother, for example, and so I could treat a new female boss that reminds me of my mother as if she was my mother, and therefore I'd be repeating some of the behavior I've had, whether it was angry, petulant, whatever behavior I had with my mother. And that's how transference can sort of get enacted. It doesn't necessarily always have to be negative. It could be a positive transference. For example, a boss might project kind of feelings onto an employee if she or he reminds her of a best friend, for example. And it could be a really good transference, a good positive emotion. But that, of course, can have some complications, as I'm sure we'll talk about later. So if that is transference, which usually refers to the projections of a client, countertransference really usually refers to the transference of a practitioner or therapist's personal thoughts and feelings onto a client. So it's, in a way, in a different direction. Does that make sense?
To me, how about for you, Priya? It is tricky, but I think I've got it mostly.
I find this one of those things I feel like I should really understand, and I kind of do, but it is complicated when you start to try and spot it, work with it, you know, understand it.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe I could kick us off with a question. Let's start with that kind of transference phase that you started off with, which, as I understand it, is when I may, you know, transfer some sort of historical dynamic I've got with somebody, like a mother, a father, or a sibling. Mm-hmm. I kind of transfer that dynamic, that relationship, onto something that's happening in my current, you know, someone I'm working with, a colleague, or someone in my team.
Exactly.
And How does it, can you give like an example, or just I'm trying to think of one of my own life as well, but just a kind of example, or how does it show up, how would I know that it's transference, I guess is I think what I'm asking.
Well, it's an interesting question, because for most people they might not really realize that it is transference. They just think, oh well, you know, I've met X person and I really got on with them really well. And it's only later that they might sort of say, oh, well, you know, she had the same voice or the same attribute. And somehow what happens with transference is that you're not necessarily reacting to the here and now of the person in front of you, but you're reacting to what you're projecting onto them. And so, again, as I said before, when it's positive, everything feels great until, you know, let me go back to the example of a manager who thinks this person who's reporting to them, they've got a really good relationship with, and they keep chatting, you know, at breaks or whatever it is. And of course, it's fine, but it might sort of get into trouble when they get to a stage where they be tempted to overlook any poor performance at work, or where even the employee then said, well, this is my mate, this is no longer a workplace. So you can see that can get you into all sorts of difficult relationship, because what you're doing is not responding to the actual situation and the actuality of the other person in the room.
I think it's that actuality that is probably making a big difference.
Yeah.
As I've been listening, I really have a current example. This feels a bit sensitive, but I'd love to put it out there and see how this goes. My father, you know, sadly passed away in 2019, so 3 years ago from this recording. You know, I loved my father, had great relationship, but of course, like any close relationship, there were definitely moments where I was irritated with my father, right? And we could talk about that. And this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So where I get, a little confused or intrigued is, as opposed to talking about my father in therapy and then transference and countertransference with my therapist, mm-hmm. I'm really curious, Mac, what about when I'm with a client? Because mm-hmm. this is true for me. So my father would sometimes say words. This is a true story. He would say things, words that I wouldn't use. I found them a bit offensive. I found them irritating to me. Okay. And then I have a client who does the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what I'm not sure about, to be very honest, is am I irritated with the client and his words, or am I transferring my relationship with my father to him? And then where countertransference comes in, I believe that client gets irritated with me.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of question. Like, is he projecting some other relationship onto me, or is he picking up on my irritation with what appears to be with him, but might actually be with my father?
Yes. This is lovely. Actually, a great question, because it really opens up the complexity about all of this. So if you don't mind me, John, you're just holding on a bit of your example.
Sure.
Just to give a bit of a background, because what you're saying is this, you know, let me redefine the term again. So even though I said countertransference refers to the transference of the practitioner onto the client, but actually in more modern times, the term countertransference was changed to include any reaction a practitioner had to a client. Why? Because it was recognized exactly that we're never totally objective, we're never detached. We can't necessarily stand outside the system and look in. So, you know, someone said there's no immaculate perception. So I can't say that I'm now just reacting only to the transference of this client onto me, because we always view any situation from within the lens of our own experience. So we necessarily, in every reaction, bring in our own expectations, hope, feelings, experiences. And that's why when you present this question about your father, this query, you know, are you reacting to your client, which is called proactive countertransference, which is when your own past interferes with the work and you project something onto your client. So that's proactive countertransference. Or what you're saying, is it a reactive countertransference, which is the more traditional sense of countertransference, which has been written about Freud, where we respond to the transference expectations of the client. So in a way, we get caught up in the game in some ways. The reality is that very, very often, you get a bit of both. Does that make sense?
Sure does. I'm listening. I'm wondering what's going on for Priya.
I find this, you know, some things in this sphere that we work in with people and dynamics and teams and organizations, there are some things to me that feel, you know, like you learn a theory, or you know, you learn a model, or you learn some sort of idea, and it just makes the world make sense. With transference and countertransference, I think this is my work, right? I get it intellectually.
Yes.
I find it really, I've always found it really, really difficult to apply to my to see it in myself. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know why that is. I think I'm doing some transference. I have an early childhood relationship that's, you know, really affected me, and so I'm sure it spills out in my adult life. You know, I can kind of feel it, but I can't see it.
Yes.
And anytime I talk to somebody about transference and countertransference, I suspect it happens.
Yes.
I just think I've got almost like a blind spot around it, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes.
Like I can't see it, but I know it's kind of there.
And it's, you know, it's normal to sort of have that, because, you know, you almost can't live in the world without some transference. And that's why I want to kind of recognize that. We would never go into a shop and expect to be served if we weren't projecting that we will be served on the person inside the shop. So that's how normal it is. But there's something here about distinguishing. So we all get caught up in that. What's most important, especially in the workplace, I think, is to understand our countertransference. And the most important thing for me, you know, as a practitioner, is when do I pay attention to it? I pay attention to it if suddenly I'm in a situation where my reaction is not typical or context appropriate. So I usually am tracking in myself the intensity of my reaction and how unusual it is. So let me give you an example. Let's say I feel angry with a client, or let's say irritated with a client, you know, it's happened recently because they've postponed and changed the date of a meeting about 3 times in the last 2 months. Now, this reaction feels to me like a reasonable reaction to the situation. When it gets interesting is when I'm thinking, well, hold on, when's my countertransference worth reflecting on, either taking to supervision and being curious about, either because it's problematic or actually when it might inform me about something in the system. And then it is exactly when it's unusual, not context appropriate, and, you know, the intensity of the feeling is more than I'm expecting.
So Matt, that really helps me. So if I can just share something.
Sure.
The thing I notice that comes up for me is I'm a pretty level kind of person. I'm not, you know, my mood generally is pretty stable.
Yeah.
But there are times when I have this and it feels like a white hot flash of I would say irritation.
Mm-hmm.
I need to sit with a pattern and work it out, but it's usually something where I think that somebody is got power over me, or I feel slightly taken advantage of, or I feel slightly told what to do, or you know I'm not 100% clear about it, but it's some sort of power over me thing. And what I do is I feel this flash of irritation that just heats me up, And I almost bristle, like I almost physically shake.
Yeah.
And what comes out is quite, it's almost a bit passive aggressive, if I'm honest. It's quite curt. It's quite pushed back. It's a little bit patronizing, but I'm almost like pushing the person off me with the tone of my voice, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
That's when I see it come up for me, where I think, this is probably very disproportionate to what's actually happened. But I've almost like lost control of the actual situation. And that's when I feel this transference in me come up.
Absolutely. You know, it's, and I don't want to pry too much, actually, Priya, but I imagine is that you know where that is placed in your own history and experience.
Yeah, I do.
You wouldn't.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have that. So is that that sense of, you know, that, that level of anger. But what's interesting here is that it takes that amount, you know, that threshold of anger and emotion to for you to sort of say, okay, something's happening here. And the reality is, yes, you might have been triggered from your past. And at the same time, there's also a reality, there's an information about the client that you're working with or the person you're working with that actually they probably are quite demanding. So it's twofold here. So the question would be, how come I've been triggered? Because, you know, in a way, you're not always triggered. So it has to do, that's why transference often is referred to as co-transference. It has to do with you as well as the other person.
So we've got co-transference, proactive transference, and reactive transference.
Yeah, so proactive and reactive. Yeah, exactly. They're big terms.
And the language that's popping up for me, and see if this is close or resonates with anybody, is, I just wrote it on my whiteboard here, is this about me right now, or is this about something else and this is some pattern for you, right? Like, I guess I'm talking about someone else putting transference onto me, right? Mm-hmm. Like that kind of sense of that white hot flash you were talking about, Priya, like, is it about that person you're interacting with, or is it some other thing that's going on for you? So is it about me, and is it here in this moment, or is there something? It's that aha for me, that it's like, it's the aha of transference of, we're in this conversation and you're irritating me, but the other word I would throw out is like, I'm stereotyping or I'm typecasting the person I'm talking to. It's not actually in the relationship between me and that person. Yeah. It's some other relationship that I'm not quite aware of that I'm bringing in to this.
I that really resonates with me, because the word that I wrote down was pattern. It's it's the pattern of it that can tell you that you're, to your earlier point, it's the pattern of it that tells you that actually there's something here that that takes me away from the actuality of the situation and has triggered a kind of repeating loop in me. I guess that's where people might come across this stuff, where they've got a pattern of behavior or reaction that feels really strong to what you said earlier. That's when it might start to pop up for people as something to get curious about. Is that what you find in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, I think accurately identifying a transference and making sense of your own counter transference implies a certain level of self-awareness and clarity in the practitioner. So it, you know, I would sort of say to our listeners now, you know, don't expect yourself to either get it or not. It takes time to build, and actually time to pause and almost start unpacking your feelings. And that comes with a bit of experience and practice, and hopefully someone alongside you that will do that. So so it can be quite hard to achieve, especially because, as you know, John and you sort of give this reaction, it's usually the practitioners being triggered from their own experience, as well as something happening with the client or the client system. So it's always, almost always, a co-created phenomenon.
So I know we'll start wrapping up in a minute or two, but I hope I don't open up in something too big here. But I really have this question about, so what do you do about it? What are the words you use? What's the intervention? How do you check in and see in the moment? Is this transference, is it worth calling it out? Like, all those questions. When do you and how do you call it out in the moment?
I'll try to respond in a in a tight way, but it is a big response because the response will start, it depends. But I think the first point to say is pause, reflect, ask yourself, could it hold interesting information about myself, the other, the situation, about the relational patterns here that are being played out? And then try to see, can I recognize it? Is it about me, about others? Usually combination of both. But you can either choose to accept it, and sometimes it's not worth saying anything. So you might be uneasy, for example, because of a positive transference where a client is idealizing you. For example, if it's has happened recently, some OD kind of manager who's new in post, who needs to feel that they have an expert like that they can rely upon, and there's a positive transference going up. Is it worth challenging? Is it worth saying anything? Maybe not at this stage, and just accepting it as a developmental stage for them. And of course, as a practitioner, allow this to overinflate my ego. So that's one. So you could choose to accept it. The second one is you could explore it with the client. And you could sort of say, I don't know, something like, you seem to be distrustful when I make a suggestion, what's going on? Or I wonder if you're experiencing me as critical, you know, that sort of reaction. Even a light, you know, interpretation, you could sort of, at an appropriate time, you know, I wonder if you're feeling irritated with me. You know, that could be an absolutely fair intervention to have. And as a gestalt, it's finally, we actually say, be in the here and now. And so you can confront the transference. And confronting the transference would be a bit more, you know, direct. You could say, you know, you seem to be treating me as if I'm judging you. You know, I don't feel judging of you. So I'm wondering what's happening here. So I think mostly we say, if you want to be in the here and now, it's often, you know, in our work in organization, not always appropriate to do it in a large meeting, but just choose a moment and actually have that difficult conversation with your client and explore it. And of course, always, always take it to supervision.
Mac, I feel like I could talk about this for about another two, three hours. It feels like I'm doing therapy work for myself. I love some of the hints that you've kind of shared with us. Those kind of, you know, watch out for those real kind of strong emotions, kind of repeating patterns, where you might get kind of divorced from the reality of the situation, and then kind of pausing, reflecting, getting curious. I really like that stuff. Yeah. If, you know, and this is a question for you and John, as somebody that's really struggled with this and has some kind of blind spots in this area,
yes,
I'm sure some of our listeners will be the same. Mm-hmm. Is there, because this feels to me like this is, there's real work for people here around this, because when my take of what, as I've been listening to this, is that when we're doing transference and, you know, we're kind of guided by forces that may or may not be helpful for us today, now in our adult lives, right? We could really be run by things that happened to us in our kind of formative years, which is where my example comes from.
Yes.
And the question I ask myself is, I just don't think that's useful for me now in my 40s. Mm-hmm. That is not a useful pattern for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to attend to that, mm-hmm. is the kind of thought where my mind's going. The kind of question I'm kind of holding is, how do people, as they start to become aware of this stuff, it's a bit scary, you know, to kind of be in your 40s and think, God, I'm really heavily influenced, and I'm kind of spilling out all over the place by something that happened a long time ago. Do you, John, have any advice about how people can take care of themselves as they start to learn and become aware of this stuff? Because it feels like it's the path to some quite deep work.
Yeah, I was resonating and listening deeply and trying to take notes at the same time as you were sharing that, because I had to write down two things so I didn't forget them while I was listening. I wrote down, Priya, you know this about me, and Mac, I think you do too. And for everybody listening, for me, I do some of my personal work is working with my repressed anger. So decades and decades of anger that I've pushed down. And then one of the phrases that sticks with me and can often bring tears to the back of my eyes is, I stayed long enough with my anger for her to tell me that her real name was sadness. Right? So there's anger and sadness work that I need to do. Now, the other thing, just to bring in my own complexity, and hopefully this is as humble as I can share, I'm also very aware that I'm quite a people pleaser. I like to say yes to everything, and I like to be liked. We've talked about it in our podcasts, Priya. So in this episode of Transference, Counter Transference, I become more aware of those two patterns, let alone others, with certain clients. When I say yes to work, when I feel in my body, I don't want to do that work. And so then I'm like, ooh, this is something from a different relationship, different pattern. This is relationship with self. And now I'm bringing it in here. Where's my own, or what's that pattern? That's the word you talked about before. So I don't know if it's advice, Priya, as much as it's almost just repeating what Mac was saying about that self-awareness, that slowing things down might be my words for catching myself in the here and now, in moments where I'm interacting with a person and wondering what's going on for me in that relationship and for the other person, and actually checking in, like asking questions about what's going on in the relationship, as opposed to projecting or guessing or holding it back and not asking about it. That's my pattern.
Got it. There's so much courage that's involved with this. Yeah. Mac, I'm gonna be really cheeky. I know we're nearly out of time. We need to wrap up, but there's a question I'm dying to ask you. As somebody that, you know, has really deep, profound understanding of this space, you've clearly worked with it for a long time.
Yes.
What's changed in terms of how you manage transference and countertransference from, say, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where you might have been less aware than you are now? Like, what's changed in your response? I'm really curious about where, because I think awareness is the pathway to control of this stuff, right? Or not control, but, you know, being able to choose your reaction. So with where you are now, you know, has I'm sure it still happens for you, you're a human,
of course,
but how's your response changed, I think, is what I'm asking.
I think it, you know, what I don't want to put forward is that we suddenly become saints or some sort of monks or anything like that. We still have, you know, our baggage, but what happens, or at least what happened to me, is that you become it's quicker for you to identify it and place it. And actually, once you have the awareness, then there's a way of supporting yourself. So what I'm really appreciating about, you know, this conversation and the sharing actually is that, first, to sort of say to people, it's never too late. You know, you were saying, Priya, 40 and dealing with it. It's never too late. It's just about, you know, being willing to look at this stuff. And you don't need to do a deep dive into all your psyche or anything like that. But be prepared to be self-reflective. And I think that the change for me is that I've been able to pause more, you know, before reacting. And that's been incredibly useful, both in my personal life with my children, as well as in my work life.
I think that might be getting close to my question worth asking too. So if we start to wrap, the title of our podcast is Questions Worth Asking. And the idea is here, we have not prepared this at all on purpose. The idea is, given what we've talked about, what do each of the three of us think are, in this moment, the question worth asking for us to chat about? Anybody have one? I've got one that started for me, in case this sparks anything. I'm kind of between two. One is, how do you catch it? And I guess the it is counter transference.
Yes.
How do you catch your own counter transference is one for me. And then the other one is, even though we've talked about it, and I think I do have some responses to this, it's for everyone listening, what do you do with it in the moment? Do you speak it? Do you not speak it? How do you speak it? What words do you use? What do you do with any catch of transference or countertransference in a real moment with another person? Mm. Mac, how about you? What's a question worth asking?
I have one, and it might be, you know, one sort of ponder and leave for others that we haven't kind of delved into, if I could say that, which is, what is my counter transference informing me in terms of a source of data about the system or the other person I'm with.
Nice.
Oh, I love that one. I love that one. For me, the both of your questions I love. For me, being very honest, the question I'm holding for myself, I'm asking myself it, is around control. What am I not in control of because of a transference that I'm making or a counter transfer? You know, what is it that I'm not responding to as Priya, the adult, because of something? You know, there's almost like an override that's happening. That once it gets triggered, there's a loop. So I'm kind of asking myself that: what is it that's that I'm not in control of? And the question behind that I'm kind of pondering, that might be one for our listeners, is, you know, when is, you know, you've shared positive and negative examples, but when is a transference helping me, and when is it hindering me, and how do I know if it's hindering me, and how do I kind of regain some control of it? So those are the kind of questions that this short but very insightful conversation are bringing up for me.
Good one.
Priya and Mac, a huge thank you for both of your time and thoughts and energy. And how do we wrap it up, Priya? Remind me.
I think it's just to say thank you to Mac. This has been a genuinely, we wanted something that was a bit edgy and a bit real. Thank you so much. I feel like this is a conversation that I'm going to be journaling about and spending some time thinking about for the rest of the day. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure,
really, to have this conversation with you, and kind of a reminder as well of how complex but incredibly useful it is to talk about. So thank you.
Goodbye from Questions Worth Asking.
Goodbye.
Now, bye.
Thank you for being with us. Until next time, it's your turn to ask the questions worth asking.